Welcome to today's episode of the Public Health Networker. Today we speak with Shamir Sweeney about the long COVID experience, and in particular, the Black long COVID experience. Shamir shares with us her experience and her story about how the Black community is often excluded in long COVID representation, research, and healthcare, equitable services. She shares her advocacy and her work and the new documentary that she's working on about the Black long COVID experience. We hope you enjoy this episode. To learn more about us, visit publichealthpodcasters.com. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Public Health Networker. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Shamir Sweeney, who is the founder of the Black Long COVID Experience. This is a really important conversation we're about to have today. I'm really grateful that we were able to connect on Threads recently. And so I am so grateful because, yes, a lot of the advocacy that's out there lacks a lot of diversity. So I'm really glad that we connected today. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, April. I'm so glad to join you. And I'm so glad that we did meet over Threads. It was real chill and relaxed, just the way I like it.
Same. Yeah. So Shamir, please tell us a little bit more about you.
Oh, absolutely. So I am a Washington, D.C. native, but I moved to Baltimore, Maryland in 2003, and I lived there for 20 years. And within the last almost decade or so of my living there, probably about 2014, going into 15, I became a middle school teacher. So I still like to consider myself a middle school teacher, a teacher, an educator, an informer. Of good information and news that people could really use, especially in the Black community. I spent 5 years teaching in Baltimore City, and Baltimore, education-wise, is considered to be one of the most deficient, underserved school systems. So many people still today want to know how I was a middle school teacher in Baltimore City. And I always say to people, it was the best career I've ever had. And I would do it again if I physically could. I got to teach a diverse population of students. And the reason why it was so easy for me is because I wanted to do it. Right. I wasn't paying attention to the statistics of the fact that teachers now who get hired as teachers only work about on average 1 to 3 years in different systems for different reasons. I did not care about what the news said about those students, because each and every day that I work with them, we were able to defy what the media in Baltimore was saying about those children, what the police were saying, even what some of my colleagues were saying, and what the general population in the society thought about Baltimore children. And I was proud to do that job for 5 years. Had I not gotten sick with long COVID, April, I assure you that I would still be doing that job today. It was the highlight of my life and my career. When you say you're a teacher, and you know this, when you say you're a teacher, people instantly respect you. And so I was able to get a lot of respect and encouragement, not only because this was a job that paid my bills, but it was a career that I truly enjoyed. Sadly, until March 22nd, 2020. That day, as it's coming up on the fourth year of my being chronically ill and disabled from COVID and long COVID. Even as I think about the day quickly approaching the anniversary, the commemoration of my long COVID experience, I get very emotional because that day changed the entire scope of my life, not just professionally, It changed my relationships, my interpersonal relationships with people, my ability to communicate with people. And people don't like to hear this, but I lost everything after that day. There were many days because of the brain issues that I thought I lost my mind because I was really struggling with mental health issues. Every system in my body, April, it felt like my every system in my body was saying, I reject you. I reject you. And it just felt like my body was being turned inside out because that's how much pain I experienced and that's how horrible I felt. From digestion to physical pain to being able to swallow, being able to think clearly, from being able to even eat. During that time, the first 9 months of my COVID or long COVID experience, I lost 30 pounds in 3 weeks. And I went blind in my left eye for months and months and months. And I knew that it was connected to COVID. In the process of the pandemic starting, I lost a romantic relationship. And eventually I lost my career. But what my illness did in those first few months was make me realize that I lost the safety and the security I once felt in the medical system, in the public health system. I had a great career. I had all the benefits as a teacher. I was a part of a union. I got discounts during National Teacher Appreciation Week. I mean, I was living it up. And as a child that was born in poverty in DC, I had that was the most money I had ever made. That's the most money that I had seen around my family, even with my mom. My mom, I made more money than my mom, right? And with that insurance card that you earn because you work, our society tells us, our politicians tell us, you earn the right to receive great equitable medical care because you have this card, because you work. I lost that starting on March 23rd, a day after my first symptoms. And so I lost my ability to be treated with equity and care and compassion because the majority of the time that I was seeking care, I was told that I was just anxious. And that I was anxious about the fact that I couldn't teach because students were out for weeks at a time. I was told that I was not mentally well enough to know how my body felt. I had doctors arguing with me about the kind of care I needed and what I suspected was happening in my own body. I experienced racism as I watched other races of people, or mostly white people, get treated before me and treated well. I lost my vision, so I couldn't see well, but I could hear what was happening and I could see out of one good eye to see. And so I experienced the worst humiliation because of the racism, the sexism, and the outright discrimination that I experienced was enough to send me over the edge to the point where, I even, as a trigger warning, I wanted to take my own life. It wasn't just the symptoms that made me feel that way. It was the degradation I felt each and every time, 12 to 13 times to be exact, that I went to hospitals begging for help. I begged doctors to treat me or to keep me overnight, to monitor me so they could really see what was happening. And each and every time I was told no. What this created in me is the best monster of its kind. It created in me a patient advocate and activist for Black people with long COVID. because as I said, in those hospital rooms, I thought about my kids. My kids, I don't have any biological kids, but I had students who, 100 students who were my babies. And so I said, oh my goodness, each and every time I went to the hospital, I would say, if this is happening to me and I am educated, I'm employed, I'm insured as a Black woman, then I can't imagine what will happen to students and their parents and their families when they come in here and they don't have some of those privileges, right? And they're mistreated just like I was. And so I started speaking out. I remember the day I was going to take my own life, and my best friend talked me out of it. God bless her, Sequoia Thompson. And she said, you can't do that. There's something that you're supposed to be doing. And I said, you know what? I'm going to write to politicians. I'm going to write to these doctors. I'm going to let them know that I know what's happening and I'm paying attention to them. Even, despite how sick I was, I wanted them to know. And so the more I wrote, even not having vision in one eye, which ended up being cataract surgery, I had to have two cataract surgeries, on each eye, one for each eye, because I lost my vision in both eyes. I wrote to them. I wrote to my local city council. I wrote to state delegates. I wrote to senators. I wrote to governors. And I wrote to the hospitals. And eventually, I was able to get my city councilman connected to Johns Hopkins. And he asked, he said, well, my constituent is begging and needs your help. How can we help her? And then the ball started rolling. So from that, for the last 4 years, less long, the story, I've become a Black patient advocate focusing on Black women and families. I'm immensely proud that I was able to take my career from being a teacher to now educating people about the importance of knowing the effects of long COVID in Black communities.
Really appreciate your advocacy. So tell us more about the Black Long COVID experience.
Even though I just started, the business and got the name and everything, at the top of this year, it's been a project, and it's been an idea in my head for a very long time. I think since probably about 2021, after I spoke to Congress the very first time that they were willing to discuss long COVID, and that was the NI with the NIH, that was many congressional members in the country, and a few patients who were sharing their experiences, and some doctors. And I just thought to myself, I said, I was watching what was happening, and what I was seeing was in the media, especially during the first 9 months to a year, I was watching the media tell all of these beautiful stories about COVID, and then watching as my patient community, people who I had grown closer to, because we all were saying the same thing about our symptoms and what was happening to us. We were losing careers. We were losing health insurance. We were losing our homes. We were losing money that we had saved for years and years, paying for doctor's visits and paying bills that once, jobs and careers would pay for. Many of us were diagnosed with long COVID, and we became disabled as a result. So some of us have become reliant solely on government assistance or any retirement benefits. We're just not the same. And I was just watching how the media and politicians were telling these stories, and the stories never jived with me because they were distorted. They were not a true representation of what the news was writing and saying and who they chose to cover. And I was like, part of the reason why I spoke to the media at the first time, Wired UK, is because I just was like, wait a minute. I'm seeing a lot of these stories only chronicle the issues happening in white women, but I don't see a black face or another member of the BIPOC community. I don't see anybody that looks like the country that we live in. You're telling a very pretty story about a group of people, and it's not reflective of me and the people that I'm growing to know in our communities. And so I say, oh, that became my mission, is to talk to as many platforms and people about this, and also to encourage Black communities about the things that they could do. Writing about this on social media, writing about it on my website, and talking to the media and writing articles about what we could do as a community to understand the effects of long COVID, because no one else was doing it for us. And as always in the beginning of any journey where you focus on your community, people, of course, challenged me, and they still do. They're like, well, why are you just talking about Black people? And I'm saying, number one, because I'm Black. I care about what happens in my community, and it doesn't mean I don't care about anybody else. I want all of us to get the cook. I want all of us to get equitable treatment, to be a part of research, to be a part of I want us to change the face of public health and change how long COVID patients are treated, along with ME/CFS patients, along with cancer patients, along with diabetic patients. However, every year there are a handful of articles being written about how Black people, women, are not receiving equitable treatment in maternity health. And I also want them to know that many of us have never felt like we received good treatment with any condition. And that goes for Black men too. And so what I started to do was I started answering all of these DMs, these messages from people who would, Black people who were quietly, coming to me and saying, hey, don't say anything, but could you tell me, what's going on? People who were cheering me on, family members, friends, community members who were saying, I'm so glad that you're talking about this, because my uncle, my grandmother, my niece, people are suffering, right? And so it's an experience. It's been an experience for me to live with long COVID. So with that experience, I think that there had to be something, a project that was educational, encouraging to help people not only find the medical resources, but to navigate the government systems for resources that were patterned after them. And to speak truth to power about the inclusivity of Black people in some of these health organizations that claim they want diversity, because a lot of them do. But if you were to look at their staff members and what their hiring tactics, or excuse me, strategies are, they don't. So I'm asking, I'm asking a couple of things. And so recently I've decided to change some of the dynamics of my advocacy, to support more Black people on a larger stage.
Yeah, because it's more than just long COVID, and like we say, it's the great exacerbator. At first, they were calling COVID the great equalizer. That's what they were saying back in the beginnings. And no, this is one example of a systemic problem that we have in healthcare and in public health. And coming from the field of public health, it's not making sense, right? The
Me
things that we're
neither.
doing, the way that we're treating communities, the way that we talk about equity, but seeing who's in leadership, seeing, what they're saying versus what they're doing, where the money is, it's not making sense. The math
Not
is
making any sense. And
advocacy.
even just recently, yeah, thank you for sharing that and saying it, because it's true. None of it makes sense. Because and I just crit you know, I just was I was very critical of the recent long COVID hearing, sponsored or put on by the Health Committee in the Senate. And I was like, people were saying, And I'm always happy when they talk about long COVID. So at first I was kind of basking in like the cheer and the celebratory words on social media. And then I sat down and I thought about it, and I was like, after watching it and really letting it sink in, I was like, oh no, it's not anything to be super proud of. Because if I look at that hearing, I look at the senators holding the hearing, then I look at the audience that was permitted inside the room. And I was like, my girl Angela Vasquez, I'm sorry, Angela Vasquez, she was there, and she did an amazing job talking about long COVID and asking for diversity. But once again, 4 years later, I'm looking at the politicians who are talking about it. I'm looking at the people that are testifying. I'm looking at the audience. And I said, it wasn't a good hearing
Yeah, and what are
because
the
it's
results?
still not reflective of the country we live in.
There's so much that's missing
So
there
much.
in every
Yeah.
aspect of healthcare and public health and representative
Yeah.
leadership. It's like, what were they going to do with that hearing? What was the result of that hearing? What were the actions that
It's been a month and we still don't know what they intend to do. Just recently I saw Senator Sanders. We appreciate his support of long COVID patients, but he just recently posted a video that included myself and a few other people who were suffering with long COVID and suffer who will continue to suffer. And my biggest thought was, I said, oh my goodness. It's 2024. That clip was filmed by NBC in 2023. First of all, what we have to do is we have to get current and clear, because there's a lot of information about long COVID. We haven't done a study, honestly, of the BIPOC community members who suffer since 2022.
right. And then there's this irony where there's BIPOC participants are just like, I am feeling really excluded from this. I'm not even gonna continue this. This is not making any sense.
Yes, and that's why one of the reasons why I dropped my participation in that, because I saw some things and I was like, nothing that you're doing is really, you can talk about everything and you can get this done, but let's talk about how we are going to raise awareness. And how are we going to invite BIPOC community members to participate in research? Because it's the hardest job, but it's always this circumventing. We'll get to it. We get to, oh, we know, but you never get to it. So for me, I'm not so money hungry that I drop out. I said, I can't do this, because if you don't even know how to market to BIPOC communities in your language and your educational pamphlets on your website, I mean, it's simple, then I don't need to be a part of this. If we're still struggling 4 years later, hundreds of years later, talking about how can we get this group of people to be a part, then guess what? I don't need to be a part of it.
The whole thing is so ridiculous because we remember that year, was it 2020, when the shutdowns were happening
Yes.
and all of this like health equity talk started happening. Everyone started bringing up EDI, DEI initiatives and how they're all failing. The
Now
movement,
everybody is
this
like,
is the moment, right? Yeah.
right, always. And that's what, that's sometimes what I what causes me, especially, and not to get too political, but we're in a political election year, and there's just so much wonkiness going on about public health. And that's another reason why I'm turning my advocacy into filmmaking, right? As we talk about, it's tentatively titled because I'm in the very early stages of pre-production. Right now, it's called Black and Unbelieved, right? However, it's going through some changes as I kind of look at the world from a bigger, from a bigger standpoint about how this has been, the complicated relationship between Black people and science and medicine has can be traced back to, honestly, post-emancipation. Even then, what we don't know is that Black slaves, as we were in, as slavery was ending, they were already seizing and trying to seize control back over their bodies with creating hospitals, creating even quarters where they were they created their own hospices, raw food diets, picking and the soil from the land, and even medical doctors who were helping during the Civil War was were advocating. They were asking white doctors, "Hey, I'm treating these soldiers here over here, and I need the tools, the medication. I need the surgical tools to treat these people. I work for this country. I'm actually serving in this war. Can I have the tools I need to do my thing?" Living in a post-slavery world where we were advocating and reclaiming our bodies, right? Had to create hospitals in these environments, and how we are doing the same thing now. There's an inheritance that we have, and I want to show audiences of every race, every sexuality, every belief system. COVID gives us an opportunity to take reins of our inheritance, the
Yeah.
advocacy, it and the and to really use different tools this time to advocate. Even in education, you have a you have Black and brown students who are afraid to even learn science, math, and health, because there's been such a long history, over 100 years, of that being blocked. But
Yeah,
here we
I
are in
can
a
do it.
pandemic still, and we have the opportunity to advocate for ourselves during COVID. And so once I started making those connections, and I'm working on raising the money to tell this story, it's very difficult for a woman filmmaker, excuse me, a new filmmaker to get any type of funding. And the fact that I'm Black and I don't look like a filmmaker, makes it even harder for me. For some reason, people want you to look like you should make films. I'm like,
Supposed to wear black.
right. I'm like, what you want me to do? You want me to,
It's so
but I am, I'm,
unfair.
yeah. You want me to already have a director's chair and know how to shoot my own material and stuff, but I'm learning a lot, because I really do want to tell this story. And I've gotten some, I've thankfully to the community of people who believe in my ability to tell the story about Black people and Black communities across this country with long COVID. I've raised almost $15,000. And I'm grateful for that in a very short amount of time. I'm so grateful. And the donations have come from everybody. And I'm so thankful, but I still need more money because, a lot of funders, they are willing to help BIPOC community members, members of the LGBTQIA community. But they do, it looks, they do want you to raise some of your own money, some of your own capital. And so I'm still raising the money until raising the money until as long as I can raise it. And so, I'm glad that you allow me to come on and talk about that, because I really want people to go to the website. It's www.theblacklongcovidexperience.com, where they can learn, quickly about the film. It's a one-pager, so people don't have a lot to read through, but there are opportunities there to donate to the film. I'm putting my creative team together. I have a meeting with many of those, some of the cast members, and people that I want to be a part on this Sunday. And so I'm looking forward to it, to tell the many sides of this story, and not proving humanity, because I'm human. You human. Oh, we are all human, and we don't have to prove that to nobody. We're human just because we're here and we're born. So, and not a woe is me. This is not a woe is me project either. This is about straight up and down advocacy, inheritance. Exactly. And so I'm really excited about it. I'm making my first trailer right now, and I'm struggling, but it's so fun. It's so I'm learning a lot about it, and I'm just proud. I'm proud of what people will get to see in about a year and a half. It's going to take a while to get it done because I am chronically ill and disabled, and I am hiring people who are also chronically ill and disabled. But we're going to get it done, and I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much for sharing your experience, sharing your
Thank
story.
you. I talked to some students at Lamar University with my comrade in this work, Dr. Margot Gage, down in Texas. And she teaches nursing students, and she's doing a series about being unbiased in healthcare. And she also wanted me to talk about my film and things like that. And she said, at the end of the class, when the class was over, she said, "Shamir, you know, she has a nice amount of Black students, and just really a lot, all races of students in her class. But she said, I've never heard the Black women speak as much as they did when they talked to you." Now, these are women who are studying to be nurses. So they are learning the dynamics and the layers of the public health system along with the history. But these are also women who have long COVID, or they have diabetes, or they're struggling with telling their doctors and making their doctors believe them. And she was like, and I thought to myself, I said, even that, Shamir, you didn't really lose what you thought you lost. You're still educating people on how to get things done. And I just thought to myself, I'm thankful because that's one person at a time. One person. If these women felt comfortable enough to talk to a stranger about their health issues and their public health maneuvering, then what would a film do?
Yeah, so
I'm
let's
telling
get the
you.
word out. We're going to do our part to get the
Thank
message
you.
out. You fundraise,
Yes, and this was a
get
great
the posters
conversation.
out.
Yes, you are so dope. You're a great interviewer. I just love your energy and your spirit.
Oh, thank you, Shamir. Thank you so much for joining us
Thank
today.
you so much, April. And I just let me know what else you need from me, and I'll give it to you soon.